Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
JB, you've decided to join us in the rugby dungeon.
Yes, I have.
What a rare treat.
I've been away for two podcasts, boys. Although I'm sure it feels like an eternity for the listeners.
It was Eli Walker and not you that made the cut for the Wales squad.
But I am definitely next up after Gav.
Right, hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Here we go then with another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast with me, Tim, with JB.
Good day.
And with Phil.
Hi, Tim.
We've got World Cup quarterfinals and we've got the return of the Aviva Premiership to talk about.
With all its stars back as well.
I know. Very good. So much to talk about. Plenty of stories besides as well. In fact, let's just start with this because the quarterfinals of the Rugby World Cup and the Rugby World Cup, brilliant as it has been, the quarterfinals are going to be missing a few big names.
Yes.
For example, Sean O'Brien.
Very big name.
Sorry, boys, are you coming to the conclusion that I came to a few years ago, that these laws, these rules, these sighting commissioners are nothing short of ridiculous?
No, I think that every single one of the individuals that was cited has a case to answer and possibly even a suspension to fulfil, but it's really bizarre the numbers that they've come to in terms of the weeks of suspension.
They've got legal people in a sporting context and it just simply doesn't work. I mean, we can't talk about, on one hand, the spirit of the game and then on the other hand say, well that's actually, it's actually the letter of the law, and to prove it, we'll get some barristers in and we'll pay them an awful lot of money.
Yeah, does it feel like the bigger nations with the better lawyers are the ones who are getting their players with the smaller suspensions? Because when you look back at Alassana Tuolangi just running and getting a five-week suspension.
Outrage. You know, it's, to use let the boys play so early in a podcast is not the best way to start it. But it's simply an outrage. I still do not know what he did. And what would you do to avoid it? How could you avoid doing that? I actually think the punch is the least egregious of all of them. Because, yeah, I get it. Okay, you're at the bottom of a ruck or your head's in the side of a mall and Sean O'Brien comes and he lamps you and he knocks you out and all the concussion crowd go absolutely mental. But that didn't happen. He was standing there and he slapped him. Well, like, it wasn't even a close... What can we get? Can we not get away with anything now?
I know.
Is it just a... It's so stupid.
Well, yeah. The punch, 1 week ban...
I'm fine with that.
I've got no issue with that.
I have an issue with it. It's nothing. It's guys, come here, shake hands.
I've been looking at all of the... There's four players who are banned. So you mentioned the Scotland pair who got 3 weeks for the tip tackle and driving Jack Lamb onto his head, which I think is fine. I've got no issue with that at all.
This is the only one I've not seen, actually, to be fair.
It was reminiscent of the Brian O'Driscoll incident from the 2005 Lions.
Do you hear the background of this? And I think it's quite a funny story.
The O'Driscoll or the...
The O'Driscoll one.
Okay, go on.
So, I mean, they're not necessarily linked, but I still find it funny. So, you know, I've got a thing about the hacker. I really dislike it. Yeah. I think the rules were absolutely nonsense and all the rest of it.
How could you watch Tonga, New Zealand and how good that was and still dislike the
hacker?
I'm
amazed, right, that there isn't a law banning Tonga from responding with their own war dance, because every other nation isn't allowed to do anything. I mean, if I was England, I'd Morris dance. Because that's the only thing you can do. You've got to stand within 10
meters. Get a maypole out.
Yeah.
Round the post. Anyway, sorry, you were saying Brian O'Driscoll.
The PC Lions, who are ultra PC, they brought Alistair Campbell along as a
public relations officer.
Press secretary, whatever it is. So they weren't sure how to respond to the hacker, which is this one was a slitting the throat one. So decided, we'll ask some tribal leaders. And the tribal leaders had a think, and they came back and said, right, Brian, you've got to throw a leaf in the air.
Pick up a bit of grass and throw it in the air, yeah.
So he throws this leaf in the air as the ultimate sign of respect, and 2 minutes later, two All Blacks jump on his head and try and end his career.
Yeah. Respect.
Respect.
Go on, Phil.
Well, yeah, that one, I think a few Scottish people will have an issue, but it was very, very... Lamb landed on his head with two players weight on top of him. They got 3 weeks. I've got no issue with that. Marcelo Bosch...
Four, actually, but they're...
Four weeks.
But they're contesting it, yeah.
Marcelo Bosch... has got a couple of weeks as well.
And by the way,
tackle.
It doesn't matter for Scotland whether it's 1 week or 10. It doesn't, as far as the World Cup goes, it makes no difference. But anyway, carry on.
Yeah, Marcelo Bosch, Alassane Tuolagi, we've gone over it again before. It is ludicrous. The Sean O'Brien one, it's 1 week. I don't actually have an issue with it.
I'm fine with that.
Well, I've been through the disciplinary. So, right, no, I've been through a 15-page judicial review.
Right. Why? Why is there 15 pages on this?
It's
nothing. There should be no pages.
Right.
No tree should die for this.
There is only one member of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast who would use that.
JB!
There is only one member of the Egg Chasers podcast whose phone repeatedly goes off episode after episode, and there is only one member of the podcast who would utter a sentence, "I read the 15-page judicial review into a rugby."
Why is there even a review? Well, okay, let's put it to one side. Let's hear this nonsense.
Yeah. So the review was to decide, first of all, whether he was guilty of contravening law 10.4A. which is a player must not strike an opponent with a fist or arm, including the elbow, shoulder, head or knee.
So that is the same offence that Alassane Tuolagi?
It is. Yeah, again, the yeah. Tuolagi decision is ridiculous. Let's move on. Sean O'Brien's people will put the defence forward. You then have a statement from the victim, and then some medical evidence, and then there's like
the
a
victim,
summary. A
the
summary.
Victim.
The victim. I've picked out some pertinent points
yes, please,
from
go.
The review. So Sean O'Brien was described as, despite playing professionally since 2007, having 42 Ireland caps, 2 British and Irish Lions caps, has an unblemished disciplinary record. He would also describe himself as being firm but fair. Which I thought was very, very apt for Sean O'Brien.
Brilliant.
I thought that was really good.
Firm but fair.
Right, the incident itself. Well, one of the things that Sean O'Brien's defence contended was that Pascal Pape impeded him, pulled him back prior to the ruck and took him out of the defensive line. So he's found that Pape was found to have impeded him. He was found to have pulled his shirt. And then, obviously, there was the hit, the strike, which was deemed to have been a punch with a closed fist. Pascal Pape and the French team's doctor both described it as a violent punch.
Oh, shut up.
And that Pascal Pape suffered violent pain.
Oh, no. That's the most... That's the worst. This is the worst bit of the whole thing. Because Pascal Pape is a what? 20 stone, 6
monster.
Foot 6.
He's a monster.
Beast
and he's
man.
An expert at dishing out pain to other humans. Yeah. that should be on his CV.
And he can take it as well. But that.
Yeah, you sometimes hear on this kind of report that the victim, for want of a better word, stands up and gives a character reference about the person who attacked him. Not in this case. Pascal Pape was very upset about this.
He was very upset about losing to Ireland.
Yeah, it came across. It came across as a little bit bitter,
tell me
actually.
This, does he have issues now communicating with his family and he's afraid to go out? Or shopping just isn't the same for Pascal Pape now, no?
There was 3 points. So, one, that the punch was an instinctive reaction to being dragged back by Pascal Pape and Sean O'Brien was just focusing on freeing himself. 2, the injury was insignificant. And 3, he put forward that a ban will make him miss the Rugby World Cup quarter-final, which is wholly disproportionate from the level and type of offending.
Correct.
As the impact on the team and country is greater than the offence. The judgment...
I feel like I want to hit something, you know. Maybe Pascal Pape.
He said, when considering the argument that missing Rugby World Cup quarter-final is wholly disproportionate... The judicial officer considered the doctrine of universality, which states a core principle within a sanctioning regime that all games must be treated equally.
I get that.
So if it was a Premiership
I'm fine with that.
Dead rubber game or a World Cup semi-final,
yeah.
it doesn't make any difference.
Good.
He misses a game. The ban misses a game. There were some mitigating factors.
I don't want to hear him. I don't
no,
want to hear
do, do you know what, do you know what's disproportionate, but the amount of time that we've spent on the podcast talking about what is,
just as a note,
what is not rugby.
And you've made a really good point here, Tim. I never even thought of this. Like, what on earth were the Tuilagi defence doing? I mean, the Tuilagi defence should be, I mean, unless he hired a legal team, I don't know, Jared Rebecca, Ali McBeal and Brian Moore. I can't imagine how you could get it so wrong. That your man who just ran into another man gets banned for
and I can't
minutes.
Imagine yeah. Japan went, he need me in the face. They'd go, especially the
honourable Japanese.
Yeah, well, if I'd have said that, you'd have just leapt on me, a small stereotyping. So I'm glad you said that, Jay. But yeah, exactly. Japan, known for their honour, they would have recognised, I'm sure the Japanese player would have recognised that it was just in battle, and it just happened.
The samurai spirit, is that what you're talking about?
Oh, it's ridiculous. That's really interesting, Phil. I appreciate
The first 10 minutes was interesting.
I mean,
first 10 minutes.
You think that it could be just done and dusted by a bit of common sense and some rugby empathetic people, but it's being done by litigators.
Yes, yeah.
It does feel like someone sold him a suite of legal services, and like, oh yeah, you need this, and then they need this, and then it's got to ridiculous proportions now.
Yeah. The judicial officer, like the way the report's written, he clearly has legal experience.
Yeah. And well, who else would he get, I guess?
The guy arguing Sean O'Brien's case was a solicitor
they should
as
do.
Well.
Oh,
they're the winners here. Yeah. They're the winners.
Yes, that's true.
Well, do you know what? They should do their reckoning, their judgments, surrounded by fans, angry fans with rocks. And if they don't like the result, well, we'll just see.
Right.
Has to be reasonable then.
Pascal Pape is going to be absolutely fine, and he is in the France lineup to play in New Zealand in Cardiff Saturday, 8 p.m. What a game that is going to be. Nigel Owens is the referee.
Ooh.
Not Wayne Barnes.
Yes, disappointedly.
By the way, is that a really good World Cup?
Wayne Barnes?
Yeah.
I think the officiating in general has been quite good. The TMOs has been a bit annoying, but I think the officiating in general has been pretty good.
I think the TMO for the first weekend was bad, and since then they have really sped things up. They obviously listen to the public.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think the TMO, this isn't a joke either, I think the TMO, all of them are based in, I think, Heathrow Airport.
Get a bit closer.
Sorry, there you go. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think all of the TMOs and stuff are based in Heathrow Airport. They've got like what I can only describe as a drone-style container. Do you know where the RAF do like their drones in containers? That. And it all feeds into a central place and then it all goes back. Hmm. I think. Or is that the Sighting Commission? One of the two have got a really like high-tech
I'm going to put it out there. For France-New Zealand, I'm going to put it out there that not a single Frenchman would get into the New Zealand starting lineup. Even Wesley Fofana.
Yeah, but do you know what?
I'd tell you who would get in.
Who?
Probably Eddie Benarous.
Yeah.
You reckon? Over
he's a hell
over
of
Wyatt
a player.
Crockett.
Over Wyatt Crockett.
Wyatt Crockett is a good player. He is definitely second choice.
Not over Woodcock. I don't think he'd have gotten over Woodcock. But
Woodcock's
maybe.
Out of the tournament.
Okay, yeah.
Possibly Guilhem Guirado. Possibly. But Dane Coles is...
He's dynamic, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, the more I see him, the more I like him. Looking at the team, that's about it.
Yeah, but then that doesn't really affect anything because the whole point of this fixture and the history of this fixture is the romance of it, is the unpredictability of the French
exactly on
any given day.
The French team wouldn't get into the New Zealand team because they're not New Zealanders. You know, it's like a fighter, like one's a striker, one does grappling and wrestling. They're two completely different propositions.
See, we think about 2007 and we think about 1999. But also, I was reading about the Battle of Nantes. Are you familiar with that?
Off the top of my head, no.
So there was, I think it was a three-match series that France and New Zealand were playing in 1986.
Ah.
And they were 1-1 after two games. And then they played a game in Nantes. And Wayne Shelford was the captain of New Zealand. And he described it, and he's one of the hardest men ever.
Yeah.
Who's played to play rugby. And he described it as the hardest match he's ever played. And... so much so that he actually got trodden on and his scrotum ripped.
That was the one.
And he lost four teeth in the process, but he didn't want to miss out on any of the action. So he reportedly calmly instructed the All Black team physio to stitch him up and then re-entered the battle.
You know,
although he was later concussed and forced to leave the field, and to this day has no recollection of the entire match.
Do you know the Andy Farrell story?
Andy Farrell?
Andy Farrell story.
When he was playing for Wigan?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
He has his nose broken. And half time, Dr. Lutz's nose goes, right, I'm going to phone my plastic surgeon mate, gets on the phone. I hope this is true. And if it's not, it's a great story. Turns back around after he's put the phone back up, because it's old, you know, olden days where they had to hang up phones. And as he's turned around, Andy Farrell's now cut a hole in his nose and goes out and plays. And he's, I think it's the famous one where he's got his head bandaged up and he drops
yeah.
a goal.
Yeah.
What? Well, I was going to say.
Got, like people wear the headband is around the ears and their forehead, he just has it around his nose.
Yeah.
A bit like, who's the Frenchman?
Harry Nordicke.
Didn't
an England footballer do that? Was it Butcher that had that once?
Butcher had it all around his head. Like a mummy. De Moulin in for Bastereau. That's a big call for France.
I don't like it at all.
From what I've seen of Bastereau, I think it's absolutely fine. Bastereau has done absolutely nothing.
But it's what he can do. I think he's a unique proposition. I absolutely love him.
I do get that. But France offered nothing in attack.
Yeah, and he Brian Moore was scathing at the weekend about him. He said he specifically watched Bastereau for 15 minutes, and he did absolutely nothing. No contribution to attack. No contribution to defence. He said he was walking for most of the 15 minutes that he was specifically watching him. So I think it's absolutely fine. He has done nothing.
There must
nothing.
Be something about Bastereau. I mean, when I watch him play, I love to watch him play because he makes a break and he can offload. I mean, for a big lad, falling over and offloading, it looks great.
You love to watch his highlights.
Yeah,
because
yes.
his highlights are great. Yeah. But if you watch the bigger picture, he's not pulling his weight.
And I think
that's a lot of weight.
I think it would be a lot of weight. I think it would be slightly arrogant of France to think that they can get away with a rear guard action like they got away with in Cardiff 8 years ago. It's the chances of having that little territory, that little possession, making that many tackles and winning a game are remote.
Well, so, you know, if you do make that many tackles, you've got a chance.
Yeah, no, but they need to score points.
Yeah. Knowing what you two both know about these two teams, what we've seen in this World Cup, how do you see it going?
I don't know whether it's just tabloid tittle-tattle, but France... there's stories about France unrest in the camp.
No, stop it.
They've been battle hardened from a relatively speaking tough pool and a big game against Ireland, and New Zealand could arguably be undercooked, but I see New Zealand rolling them over.
I'm with you 100% on that, and I'll tell you what else as well, which has really been bothering me. There's been a lot of chat about, oh, we've not seen half of New Zealand yet. Oh, they're going to have two fly halves. They're going to do this, that, and the other. This isn't the time to play your two fly half formation. In fact, the next three games, if you are lucky enough to play the next three games, are not the time to do anything new. I understand if Canterbury had been doing it, but I just don't like these noises. Now, if they don't do it and they just play like the All Blacks, they're probably going to win the whole thing. But if they do try and be a bit clever and, you know, they're not quite on their game, I wouldn't be overly surprised if France run them close. But I still think New Zealand.
I just think...
God, I hope France.
I'd love it. I'd love New Zealand to choke again, but I can't see it.
I can't see it either. From what I've seen of the two teams... France's weakness has actually been their fitness. We were all talking about their big bench.
Mm. Yeah.
But it was the last half an hour against Ireland. Ireland, even with all those injuries, really pulled away.
But which of these...
And France looked pretty poor in the last half an hour. New Zealand, on the other hand, there's been a lot of people saying they've not been performing well. They've still outscored their opponents massively.
You saw France last week offer nothing, really. Mm. Against Ireland,
yeah, they really did. They had no creativity, no ideas. They hardly made a line break. They had some overlaps. They just couldn't finish it off. They were drifting. They weren't passing straight.
Basics,
real basics.
And they've brought back in their petit général, haven't they? Morgan Parra to kick sticks.
Parra, yeah. It'll be Parra and Spedding probably kicking sticks. Spedding from a long way. The point I was going to make about New Zealand, people have been saying they've not looked great. They've not had to look great.
No.
They've still outscored their opponents by more than 3-1. But it's the manner in which they've done it. So in the first half of games, it's been a lot closer. They've only outscored their opponents by 2-1. In the second half of games, they've outscored their opponents by more than 5-1. They've just completely blitzed opponents in the second half.
And we know what they can do in the last 10 minutes of games. They're never beaten.
Yeah, and with France, with their...
Suspect
conditioning.
Fitness.
Yeah, conditioning. I think this will be tight until half-time and New Zealand will blow them away.
And I just think Nigel Owens will officiate it such that New Zealand would have enough ball to win, basically. The curtain raiser for New Zealand against France is Wales against South Africa, Twickenham, 4 p.m.
Here is my take on this. Wales have got no injury crisis whatsoever in the pack. We have actually got everyone fit and firing that we can possibly pick from in the whole of the nation of Wales available to play rugby. It's quite incredible.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the knockouts, and I think we might be the only team in this position.
That is a first choice Welsh pack if everyone's fit.
Yeah.
And everyone is fit.
Now,
who will they go at loose? Who have they gone with at loose head?
Gethin.
They went for Gethin Jenkins.
If there was a front row that I'm not afraid of, it's a South African one. Yeah. Because they've got a lot of name recognition there, but they're not scrimmaging well. Beast is out of form. They've ditched Duplessis. And the other Duplessis, he's not a great scrimmager. He's a good scrimmager. But I actually think that bringing in Gethin does you more around the park. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
That Welsh pack is going to work so much harder. You know, we talk about these two young second rowers of South Africa, and they will be the best second row pairing in the world in about 2-3 years' time. But at the moment, Alan Wynne-Jones will run the show. And the guy who always gets mentioned every time he plays is Charteris, because they work hard. This Welsh pack cannot be bullied. It just can't be. So South Africa have got to outplay us. If they win, they will win by playing through the backs. But I honestly think that this Welsh defence and Welsh pack will absolutely destroy South Africa up front.
It's a big statement. Where do you sit on it, Phil?
I don't think they'll destroy them up front, but I think they can at least match them and possibly get a minor advantage over them up front. The Welsh back row is better balanced than the South Africa back row.
It's a mouth-watering little matchup, those two back rows, isn't it?
I think Berger's so past it. From what I've seen of him, he's just not a good player anymore.
He doesn't look like... He's better playing as a flanker than he is as a number eight, and having Vermaelen back,
huge.
But and also Francois Lowe is superb.
Francois Lowe is just a Rolls-Royce of a player. He's magnificent.
He's superb.
So is Sam Warburton, you know. And
if you were picking a back row, you probably would go Lowe-Warburton or Warburton-Lowe Vermaelen.
Well, yes and no, because, you know, I don't think you realise how important Lydia is to that Welsh team, because again they're all such hard workers, and I think that's what will be the undoing of South Africa, will be our work rate and our tackle count. Now this is where we're going to lose it. If we do lose, it'll be out wide. I think Tyler Morgan, a good player as he is liable to some defensive frailties, doesn't really like to pass.
George North's due a big game as well, isn't he?
One day. One day, as is Alex Cuthbert, one day.
Yeah,
so Cuthbert, we'll just see.
It is the weakness out wide.
Yeah,
having Ainscombe, talented player,
just not ready for international yet.
Very little experience at this. Whereas you've got the back three of South Africa, experience in spades. Maybe not as quick as they once were, Habana and JP Peterson. But
those wings don't really bother me so much as the centres do. I think the centres are outstanding.
The centres are inexperienced.
Anyway.
Yeah, but do you know what? South Africa are being prepared in the most state-of-the-art rugby facility. They've been using Penny Hill Park.
I've seen that.
I know.
Oh, I mean, that's got good omens, right?
what's come out from the South Africa camp is they've been using England's facilities. They've been using the Red Rose embossed dumbbells, which go up to 85 kilograms, the dumbbells.
So they'll be curling that, right?
And apparently it has a row of Smith machines, which I just think is that explains England's failure at the World Cup.
Yeah, it does.
What's the point of a Smith machine?
Do you reckon they
just have a squat rack with a free weights?
Do you reckon they walked into the England sauna and started making biltong, just hanging at bits of meat?
Do you know, I saw someone on a Smith machine in the gym today.
What did you do? Push him over?
He was lying on the floor, like squatting, like sort of pushing the bar up and away from him as he was lying on
like
the floor.
Use it like a leg press.
Using it like
vertical,
a leg press.
Vertical leg
press.
Oh,
no.
And he was twisting. And, I mean, if it had fallen and slipped, he would have just rightly done himself some damage and never gone back to the gym again, which is probably... Well, anyway. So a row of Smith machines, that's the reason England failed, because they didn't...
What was the one that you saw on the Smith machine? Have you seen someone?
I've seen lots and lots of things in gyms that I cannot believe.
And if you're not familiar with the Smith machine, it's like a squat rack, but it goes on runners and it's pointless.
It slides up and down. It limits your movement. I can understand if you're recovering from an injury, perhaps, where you might use it, but not for me, thanks.
Anyway.
Moving on.
How do you see this one going then?
Very tight. South Africa by 3.
I'm going very tight, and I think South Africa will edge it.
Wales by 5.
It's mouthwatering, that one.
I do think... I said it at the weekend. this is the best chance Wales have got to go through to the quarterfinals. If they've picked Australia, obviously, as they played them last week, or New Zealand, I don't think they would have much chance at all.
I think they'd love
one
more shot against Australia. And hopefully they might get it.
Maybe in the final. It's a long way to go, though.
Before we go on to Sunday's quarterfinals, I just thought I'd touch on a couple of stories which have been coming out in the last few days. An unhappy England camp, apparently. Shock horror.
Well, they're not delighted with what they've done.
There's a tabloid story where Harlequins hooker Dave Ward is defending the honour of Quinn's teammate and England captain Chris Robshaw. Dave Ward took issue with an article in the Daily Mail. I mean,
I know what's happened here.
Everyone takes issue with articles in the Daily Mail. That's just the Daily
Only
Mail.
Only from your circle of friends, Tim.
But Tom Wood was asked if he'd throw his hat into the ring as an England captain, and Dave Ward says that he's undermined Captain Chris Robshaw with his response. Tom Wood's response was effectively to say, well, you know, if I was offered that honour, I'd have to think about it and I'd probably step up. Instead of, I think Dave Ward's point was, he probably should have just said, well, Chris Robshaw's the captain and that's all there is to say at the moment.
Well, I read the original article.
Oh, yeah.
And, 15 pages?
Not all 15 okay. pages of it. But Tom Wood did say he was very guarded in his response.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm not thinking about that. Chris Robshaw's the captain. We're just considering next day and all that. Like, just a very guarded...
Next day. Every day as it comes. Well,
yeah, just the usual kind of standard sportsman response. He then got asked further, hypothetically, if Chris Robshaw wasn't there and you got asked, would you do it? To which he obviously said, well, captain my country.
And then the Daily Mail...
would be a great honour. The Daily Mail then ran the headline.
That's so unlike the Daily Mail to just...
Now, they ran the headline,
stuff.
Tom Wood wants to usurp Chris Robshaw as England captain. Dave Ward, though, has clearly only read the headline and not the meat of the article.
That's exactly
what
I'm saying.
That is the biggest problem with this.
Well, there's two things, isn't there? One, Dave Ward has either been told by his mate, have you seen what Wood said?
Yeah.
And he's got mental. And the other thing, which is now just escape me, forget it. Oh, yeah, no, here you go. Wouldn't there be a real story if Tom Wood said something like, no, I don't want to captain my country. In fact, I'm not even interested really in playing international rugby.
Yeah.
It's just something that I do for a living.
Yeah.
You know, of course you want to captain your country. It's like the greatest honour that you can possibly have.
Exactly. What is he supposed to say when pushed? Do you want to captain your country?
And then if he says, oh, no, I'm not interested, then he's clearly a liar.
Yeah.
And then he's a terrible human.
Exactly. They're just what... It's clickbait. Stupid clickbait.
It is stupid clickbait, and Dave Ward has gone for it. But that Northampton-Quins is going to be an interesting game when that happens, because here's the little tit-for-tat. Dave Ward said, with friends like that, who needs enemies? How about the 47 pens you gave away against Wales?
Harsh.
It's harsh, isn't it, for a man that can't hit his lineouts? I mean, I'll tell you a quick story regarding Dave Ward.
And then, further on in the conversation, Dave Ward posted a little clip of him stripping the ball off of Tom Wood and said, lesson number one, how to turn the ball over.
give it to Dave Ward to throw in. The cup final, not cup final, playoff final, and it was Cornish Pirates when he played there.
Yes.
He's a great player, Dave Ward, on the park. But I said to Phil, look, we'll watch this game, and I will call every time when Dave Ward holds the ball when he will miss his lineup. And I actually thought I was some sort of savant, because I miss, and I got about, what do you reckon I got? Well, I got a fair few of them.
It's like 60-70%.
It's like even better odds than tossing a coin. If you just say miss every time, you're going to get a 7 out of 10.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right.
He did. I think that game he finished with about 26% lineup accuracy. It was unbelievably bad.
I can't understand in Quins, why aren't they not saying, right, Dave, no more scrummaging and running for you. We're just going to get you to hit your lineouts. Because if he could hit his lineouts, I think he'd be in England too.
He could be, yeah. His work around the park is superb.
It is.
Useless lineouts.
And the other thing I just want to say, because we're at the quarterfinal stage, and I just think it's a shame that those countries we've been talking up for the last couple of weeks, the tier two nations the last month being doing so well, this is the perfect opportunity for them to have top level competition. Why, just like the sevens, can't there be a plate competition, a shield competition, a trophy competition, or whatever, for all the third places, all the fourth places, all the fifth places, two semi-finals and then a final? And you just...
Is this because you're an England fan?
Well, no, nothing. Well, no, actually, it would be quite humiliating
to watch England get beat by Japan.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine the terror of having to play Japan.
Every game's been a sellout. You could cut price tickets.
Yeah.
It would be a money generator, and
not a bad idea at all.
It'd be development for smaller players, the smaller nations as well.
That's a great idea, actually.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. 100% behind that.
Yeah, count me in.
All right, good. So let's get on to the other two quarterfinals then. On Sunday, 1 p.m. in Cardiff, Ireland v Argentina. On the face of it, you think Ireland, oh, well, brilliant, we've missed New Zealand. And then they go, oh, we've got Argentina with a depleted team.
Yes.
Well, you know, the team that wins this World Cup will be the team that can field the best third team. It's so attritional that I'm actually, you know, you just said that you should have two competitions. I'm wondering if they should change the whole format of it or limit player games to 30, because Ireland's a great example of just how attritional it is. The problem Ireland have got is they've lost their leaders. They've lost O'Connell. They've lost Omani. They've lost O'Brien.
And Sexton's hanging on by a thread. We'll wait and see what the team is, but a groin injury for a fly half is not.
It's like the opposite to Wales.
One.
We've lost everyone who isn't really a leader. I mean, who is there really? JD, maybe, something like that? Yeah. But everyone else has got like kind of minor roles.
Yeah, you've got your leaders. But
our leaders are fine. Yeah. Ireland are the opposite.
With Ireland, Sexton, the last thing I read, which was a couple of hours ago, said that they expect Sexton and Keith Earls, who's also picked up a knock, they expect them both to train tomorrow, so Friday, for the first time this week. So that'd be one day of training after their injuries.
If Sexton plays, are we saying that this is the most unnecessary bout of...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Sports crying that we've ever seen when he came off the field. Because he was sobbing.
It's fine, he's a passionate man.
Winking?
Their pack will be very interesting. So the team's, as far as I'm aware, not been announced yet, as
have
we record. It'll be very interesting to see what they do, because I know what I would do.
Donnacha Ryan into the row and Henderson on the flank.
That's exactly what I do. Yep. Henderson and Chris Henry as your two flankers, mm-hmm. with E-slip. Donnacha Ryan comes into the row.
Henry's a beast, isn't he?
And then it would mean that it's Mick McCarthy, who's been called up to the squad, would go straight...
What, the old Sunderland manager?
Straight onto the bench.
Mike,
not Mick McCarthy, Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy!
And that starting pack is still very good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Henderson has really demonstrated...
Henderson's got to be a future captain, right?
Hendo! And they dominated France. It is the passing of the baton, isn't it? It's just not the time or the place that
they wanted
the baton to be passed, but there you go.
No.
They've still got enough in their armoury to turn Argentina over, haven't they?
But yeah, I've been saying all tournament, Argentina are no mugs at all. They are a really, really class act. The bookies odds are... considerably in Ireland's favour at the moment. They're not huge, but they're considerably in Ireland's favour. I actually think it's 50-50. It could really go either way.
Do you know what I think is going to make a huge difference is whichever stadium they play in, they're in the Millennium again? Or they're in Twickenham?
That's a good question. I don't actually know.
They're in the, Principality Stadium, it's called now.
Okay, Principality Stadium.
Or Millennium.
Millennium.
If you don't want to give sponsors any credit.
No, Principality's fine. They pay their way. If they're in the Principality, that atmosphere will be like nothing else that the Argentines have ever played against.
Yeah.
It will be different league to anything else. So
Argentina, they've played a couple of games at Leicester and they've had a great following.
Mm.
But
this is the Irish.
That's a stadium less than half the size. So the Irish following will be huge. It will be like playing a game in Ireland.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing.
The France-Ireland game was big enough.
Yeah.
And that was, for nothing. Like, see if you...
Yeah, well, they're both already through.
By the way, at Rugby Podcast, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, and there's lots of people that have been doing that. Sooty9396 says, clearly they've started doing ban lengths on a Wheel of Fortune-style system now, going back to where this podcast started. Ollie Bayliss said of Boris Johnson tackling.
I love this.
Barging over a Japanese kid. Woeful technique, Boris. He's carrying the ball in the wrong hand. He fails to sidestep and he makes no attempt to hand off the kid.
Samoan sidestep.
Would you be interested in having Boris Johnson on the podcast to give some rugby predictions?
Oh, we'd love
would
that.
I? Would I?
Now, Boris Johnson, if any other public figure did this, it would be an outrage.
If Jeremy Corbyn did this, I'd be in a state of outrage for weeks.
Ignore the political side of it. If anyone else did this, but somehow Boris managed to get away with it, his like lovable buffoonery.
It's the most calculated character. It is a comedy character that he's constructed for himself to be able to get away with knocking over school kids and get away with it.
This is his second rugby infringement in public space. First one was that.
No, the
rugby
first
tackle.
One was awesome. Rugby tackling in a football match.
In a football match, yeah, that was brilliant.
There you go, Bojo. And Grubrap also says that he noticed Will Genya crediting Australia's excellence at this Rugby World Cup, because we're going to go into talking about Australia in a second, to Michael Checker creating an amazing culture. Ooh, he said the culture that Checker has created has made them better people and better players.
Do you think that might be a dig at England?
No, I don't think it's a dig. I think that's what Will Genya genuinely believes.
Okay.
I know how much distaste you have for culture. Squad cultures.
I am all for culture. I'm just not for 4 years of culture and no rugby.
Right, Australia, Scotland then. Should we just move on from this one? Because well done, Scotland. You had your moment. You can gloat. Yeah, this is the end. This is the end of the road.
I think this might be a shuddering end. If I was going to look for a bright spot for Scotland, the one game they did lose heavily was South Africa, but they lost it without Finn Russell. And Finn Russell being back is huge. He can control a game. He seems to make a huge difference to that Scotland team. And do you know what? They're pretty good out wide. I mean, not the Australians, but
that's
pretty
probably where
good.
Their strength is.
They're very good out wide.
Yeah.
They're back three and Bennett at 13 and Finn Russell. They're all elusive runners, dangerous runners.
I mean, I think maybe we should give them a little bit more credit because, you know, as a team, they are in the quarterfinals and they're such a vast improvement over the dreary, awful product that Scotland have put out for the last 3-4 years. And Vern Koss is a damn good coach.
Yes.
Fern
Cotton.
I think they've done well to get to the quarterfinals. I think they'll give a good account of themselves, but I think they'll come up comfortably short. I expect Australia to win by 12.
Yeah, at least 10 points to Australia, possibly more as well. If they get the opportunity to open up, it will be quite comfortable for them.
Anything else starting this weekend?
Premiership's back. I'm genuinely really excited about this.
I love the Premiership so much.
Yeah.
Do you think that all the England boys will get a game this weekend, or...?
A few have been named in the squads. From the squads I've seen, a few haven't. The Hask isn't back for Wasps, for example.
Absolute banter flying around.
Lads. but Kieran Brooks is starting for Northampton.
Excellent.
For the first time.
Didn't really play, did he? He hasn't played for 6 weeks.
Well, he was on the bench every
really?
Game.
He is on the bench.
I don't really know where I stand on do they play on, do they not. I mean, ultimately, the most games they could have had is 4, but I don't think anyone played 4 games except for Robshaw. And,
It's a very, very different Premiership this year because it's condensed, isn't it? I mean, I know there's no LV Cup, but the senior players never played in the LV Cup, so it's going to be a really attritional Premiership season.
And they've not had any time off over the summer. I mean, it's not really the games, it's all the training and all the hard work. And
Well, the players in the international squads won't have had it. That is not rest, the camps.
Yeah.
But the normal Premiership players will have had... The way I've seen a lot of them doing, they've been having like a 3-week block, a week's rest, a 3-week block, a week's rest. So the rest of the league should be refreshed.
I've seen a few Sale Sharks players by virtue of the fact that I was hosting the Rugby World Cup fan zone and it was in Manchester, so they brought some players down on each day to have a little bit of a chat. And some of those guys are looking in. Ross Harrison... He's looking in unbelievable shape. The loose head prop who was in he made it into the wider EPS. It was like the 60-man training squad just to get when they were getting Josh Beaumont and few other youngsters around the England squad. He was looking in seriously good shape.
I'll tell you what, when
lean.
England finally appoints Steve Diamond as forwards coach, he might become a full-time international.
I don't know about that. It's early days for him yet, but just purely on the shape of him, you can tell he's had... a long time. And a lot of Premiership coaches are saying that these guys are the fittest they've ever been because they've had time to properly rest.
Well, it kind of goes on to what I was saying earlier about the format of the World Cup. And I didn't really touch on it, but you know, if you think about how many how attritional the World Cup is, then they jump straight into Premiership, which is hard work, or the top 14. I think there should be some sort of law now or some sort of rule saying players can play a maximum of 28 games. Maximum. And it starts with, I don't know how you do it.
The only way to do it... They have kind of laws like
they do,
that.
But it's much, much higher.
Yeah.
It's significantly higher.
It's got to be so much...
I mean, the only way you can do it is a global season, though.
Yes, you're right. World Rugby, make our plate and trophy and shield competitions for the World Cup to get the Tier 2 nations getting more competitive games and generating more money that can be pumped back into that, and let's have a global season. So
agreed.
we can control the workload of players.
Easier said than done.
Oh,
it's so important. It really is.
Yeah.
Just as a little, I'm just looking at the Gloucester lineup for the match, and they're the guys that were involved in the Rugby World Cup are all on the bench. So Ben Morgan, Johnny May, Sione Kalamafoni, all in the squad, but on the bench.
As a side, right? Do you think if you were a director of rugby, you would play your England stars? Not because they're not your best players, they clearly are. But just the attitude of them might just be a little bit low. I just feel there might be a bit of negativity around the squad, particularly as the quarterfinals are going on.
They're professionals. If they're out on a rugby pitch, they'll want to win.
Mm.
I would, like Kieran Brooks, I think you can drop him in. Anyone who's played most of the games, I would rest him.
I mean, say if you're London Irish and you've got a whole new coaching setup. I mean, they haven't actually been hit too much by England World Cup stars. In fact, I don't think they've been hit at all. But if you've got returning stars from other nations, do you want to throw them straight in with your new line-out calls, your new moves, everything else? Or do you want to sit them for a few weeks?
Interesting decision. I would probably have prepared not to have them in. Because, you say, you've got a squad who've been training together. Introduce them back in slowly.
But on the flip side, you could argue that, I mean, that's why I would probably involve them on the bench, because those guys might be demoralised. They've been all the media scrum and everything. Getting back in front of fans with all their teammates,
people that like them,
people that they get on, they have, you know, long-standing relationships with, or just getting them straight back on the horse. I just think there's a lot to be said for that. So I expect a lot of international guys to be involved in match day squads, whether or not they're in starting lineup. So yeah, I agree with.
Do you want to go through the? Do you want to go through some of the matchups?
Yes, Friday, Worcester, Northampton
at
Worcester.
I don't know why I even asked. It doesn't matter. Northampton are going to win this comfortably.
A lot of people criticise the turnover of players at London Welsh. Worcester have had quite a high turnover of players as well.
Have they?
Yeah.
I thought they stayed relatively consistent.
They had a few young lads. They brought a few players in. Like, in the pack, they brought in Donoghue O'Callaghan and Phil Dowson.
Oh, yeah, Dowson. Now, that's a smart signing.
Well, you say that, but they did exactly the same with Jonathan Thomas a few years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, but he turned into club captain. Oh, hang on, is Dowson club captain?
Yes.
Because they're not dissimilar players in any stretch.
Yeah, utility
back rows. Worcester have got some seriously good young players that I saw in a... It was a pre-season game a couple of years ago, and I was like, there was this... Relatively speaking, quite a small prop. He had ridiculously massive quads. But he's called Rapava Ruskin, and he dominated Bristol.
He's still playing. He's a weird looking fella, isn't he?
Young, like really, really. He's got he seems to have quite a small upper body.
Yeah.
Enormous legs.
Yeah.
And he's
disproportionate legs.
Dominated Bristol last year.
I suppose they've lost Creevy, I suppose.
That's a loss. I really don't know where Worcester are at. It's a good time to play a team like Northampton.
It is. Northampton, I think they'll still be strong enough. They've got quite a few players who are in and around, like, fringe England players, like Alex Waller, like Dylan Hartley, like Kieran Brooks,
Callum
like Michael Patterson, Jamie Gibson, Sam Dickinson, Lee Dixon, Stephen Myler, Big Luth, Ben Foden.
Yeah.
All those players are in and around the England squad.
Did you say Callum Clark?
I said Callum Clark.
Callum Clark isn't starting, actually.
Jamie Gibson is he?
Yeah, Jamie Gibson and Jonathan Fisher.
You've got Sam Dickinson, still a quality player.
Now,
I'll tell you someone to watch in this game.
Please.
The reserve tight head. A chap called
Paul Hill,
who's come from Leeds, who's an England under 20s, who is apparently destined for big things.
And they've got that Tamana Harrison, who's a highly rated open side and a proper fetcher.
Yeah, but this is interesting, isn't it, right? Because... as it stands, you'd say Northampton's first team flankers or first choice flankers are two of three: Gibson, Wood, and
Clark.
And that's weird, isn't it? Because have we not just discussed how every team needs a fetcher now? And
No, we haven't discussed that. The Premiership, very few teams have out and out sevens.
Yeah, it's weird though.
England, there are very few out and out sevens.
Why do you suppose that this is?
I think it's because the weather, the focus on just pure physicality and brute force.
That's
and
what I think it is.
Size
strength, rather than skills.
And there's not many Sam Warburtons who are 6'4" and fetchers.
You look at the best fetchers in the world, and they're under 6 foot.
Brusso exactly. There's loads of
them. Brusso, Hoops, Pocock, George Smith going back, Neil back in the day. The other one to watch in the Northampton game will be JJ Hanrahan.
From Munster.
Munster 10.
Your man from Munster, yeah.
Yeah. It'd be very interesting to see how they utilise him and Myler, because he's a very talented individual.
They've got a hell of a team. Northampton Saints will win that one.
I'm a little bit upset about one of the fixtures this weekend.
Go on.
Bath Exeter.
Why?
It's too good a fixture to have early doors, like without the players.
No, it's starting with a bang. Let's deal with Fridays first. Harlequins Wasps.
I think
you're going to see a resurgence from Harlequins.
I don't.
After
not
last
Wasps,
year.
You're not. Wasps have got. I mean, they're going to go to war, probably with George Smith.
Yes.
Probably with Jimmy Gopeth.
Yes, both of those two are starting.
They've got a lightning fast back three. And what are they going to start with? Let me guess, Nathan Hughes, maybe?
Nathan Hughes at eight. Joseph
Adam Jones and James Horwill in the front five for Quins. And that's going to change their front five, which was a big area of weakness for them.
Yeah, it is, but they're not Wasps. Wasps are going to absolutely batter them.
And I'm looking across the line of this Harlequins team, particularly given that the likes of Kerr and Brown and Easter and Marler, because those boys aren't playing, it doesn't look the strongest Harlequin side.
Like, if you think about the Wasps starting second row, they went with Gaskell. He's probably still starting.
Gaskell and Cannon in the second row.
But yeah, regardless, I think this is going to be severe one way traffic.
I would also back Wasps away from home. That Quinn's squad is very different with all its England stars compared to without them.
I think it'll be close. I'll go for Quins at home by six. What's the other Friday night game? There's one more, isn't there, on Friday?
Newcastle Gloucester.
That's the one.
Yeah, whoever. Not really bothered.
The one interesting selection, well, a couple of interesting selections of the Newcastle. Todd Clever slots in at eight.
Oh, what? Todd Clever, the international USA centre in 12?
No, the international USA number eight slots in at number eight.
Todd Clever. Todd Clever's a 12, mate.
No, he's not.
Todd Clever's a 12.
You're talking about Todd Clever, USA international Todd Clever.
Right.
International back row Todd Clever.
Stop there.
Todd Clever has got longer. It looks a bit like, is it Test from WWE?
That's right. Todd Clever, the flanker, playing eight is ridiculous. He should be on the flank where he belongs. I don't know what I've gone through my whole adult life. I think Todd Clever plays 12. Maybe he doesn't do enough tight work.
It'll be interesting to see Newcastle can push on, because they had a really good attack last year, and
their good attack was partly based around Sonotti, who was exceptional, but also based around Tom Catterick.
I like this guy.
Well, he was originally a wing who they converted to a fly half. Mike Delaney has come in from Clermont, and Mike Delaney is playing 10, and Tom Catterick has gone back to the wing, which is very interesting.
And they've got that lad Simon Hammersley at fullback, who looks like school prefect.
But
he's just got onto the pitch.
Good runner.
Yeah.
So yeah, it will be interesting to see how they get on. That would be a good match. I'd say Newcastle to win at home five.
I was a bit flippant about Newcastle before. But actually, they do play nice rugby now.
Yeah.
And Gloucester. How would Gloucester's season go? We're going to get very excited about them. They're going to lose their first five games.
No, this is the one, mate. This is the one.
Oh, is this the season they make it?
Maybe this one.
Oh, it's got to be this season, right?
It's got to be one of their seasons. One of their ones is the season they turn it round.
Yeah,
and
no,
there's
no,
a good chance
well, this is
this
how it's going to go for Gloucester. We're going to say about them, this is the season. They're going to lose five on the bounce, and they're going to squeak past someone.
I don't think this is the season. I really don't think this is the season.
They're squeak past someone, and everyone's going to say, oh, they're coming together nicely now.
Yeah.
And then we get let down again.
I think they might squeeze sixth. They'll probably get seventh or eighth. Before, so Saturday, Sale Sharks, probably the least affected by World Cup call-ups.
Yeah, you're right.
Going to Saracens, heavily affected by World Cup call-ups. I just got a funny feeling Sale might do something there. That's probably going to come back and haunt me, and Saracens will absolutely hammer him.
It's the time of season you want to play Saracens.
It is.
International window. I'd still think Saracens, we've said it before, and you've said it frequently, Tim, they don't just have these big international players. They select players through the academy system,
yeah, they do.
And through the championship.
They squeeze value out of the championship, Chris Wiles being a brilliant example.
Yeah.
So they got him from Nottingham.
I think it will be very close because Sale's pack, they were very good last year, but I do think Saracens will sneak it at home.
Yeah, I mean, logic would dictate that they again win. I just think this will be quite close. Sale have had all summer the same bunch of lads, no comings and goings.
Yeah,
they've been able to do what Billy Vunipola was saying England should have done a bit more and get off on the have a knees up.
Oh,
they went
dear.
Out in Lisbon for a bit of training and a bit of social. Did Sale Sharks
a bit of Snapchatting?
And if there's one man who's got a point to prove, it's Danny Cipriani.
Oh, yeah,
hell yeah,
very very true.
Bring it. And then JB's already alluded to what the kind of stardust game of the weekend, really. What a game Bath Exeter is going to be. Exeter, who couldn't have got any closer to getting into the playoffs. Bath, who couldn't have been steadily building and have gone from sixth place to top four to second to losing in the final.
Yeah.
They've got to go one better now, haven't they?
They do.
I don't see them going. I mean, I love Bath. Anyone listens to this podcast will know I love Bath. I don't think they will go one better. I think this might be a year of regression for Bath.
No, I don't see it. I see him going from strength to strength again.
You look at that back line, but the back line particularly, they're all young guys.
Yep.
And
they've got Matawalu in there now, isn't that, at nine
yeah.
as well.
But those back line, so Ford, Eastmond, Joseph, Watson, they've all got another year of experience.
How dare you not say Banners? JB's offended you haven't said Banners.
Banners.
Sippers. I was caught the other day reading on my computer terminal. I think it was like the Sippers thing. You know when he said Sippers? He said like Sippers would pick, wouldn't pick any of the Australian guys to get into the England side.
Yeah.
And he's like, what are you saying? Because I said like, Sippers. But then I realised like how many different ways there are to say Sippers. Like Sippers when he tackles, Sippers. Sippers when he makes a break. Sippers! When we just see him and greet him in, like, in the streets.
Sippers when he's eating a kebab on Deansgate in Manchester at 2 a.m.
Sippers! Sippers! Sippers!
Oh, he's like, oh, standard Sippers.
Sippers! Yeah, there's a lot of range for Sippers and yes. Banners.
Yeah, almost identical range for the two
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, really.
Another tattoo, Banners.
No Banners.
Now, this Bath game, Bath are losing a lot of players.
Can I just point out, this is the Bath Exeter is also the live game
is
on
it?
Saturday. It's the live game on Saturday.
What's happening? What's happening, Tim?
On BT Sport.
Give us your news. Come on.
I believe it'll be on BT Sport. It'll be the live game. And apparently, they've the people who make the BT rugby coverage have made the very, very shrewd acquisition of a new reporter.
Jeremy Paxman?
Far more handsome.
Yeah. Wow.
Far more intelligent and aggressive question.
Andrew well. Marr?
Is it Andrew Marr?
No, he's got far better rugby knowledge.
Fern Cotton.
Yes, they've signed Fern Cotton. No, I will be at the Rec and delighted and proud to be representing the Egg Chasers. I will be chatting to the man of the match after the game, which, well, imagine if it was Sam Burgess. What a story that would be. If Big Sam's back in.
At six.
Oh, imagine.
Not 12.
Oh, this, well,
imagine.
We know
we don't know the team as we record the podcast. But imagine Mike Ford has the masterstroke of putting Sam Burgess straight in at six.
That's a massive finger up to Lancaster. That it's just.
That would be a soap opera storyline.
No. Bath at home, but they are losing a lot of players to internationals.
A lot of players, yeah.
They might have a lot back. That's the other thing.
They might do. It depends how they want to reintegrate those England players
quickly and aggressively.
But even so, right? Even Sean of their front row, you go Autorak, one of the breakthrough young players last year.
Yeah.
Henry Thomas. The tight head.
Yeah.
Ross Batty.
Or where, but I mean, it depends. I mean, Atwood and Hoops in the row. Yes. Two of England's best second
Leroy Houston at number eight. Matt Garvey at blindside. They've got it. Just shows the depth of their squad.
You know what? They will. I mean, obviously, missing one of the best players on the planet is going to be a blow. But I think Lowe is so important to that pack, particularly when you've got Garvey, particularly when you've got Burgess, because of the work rate. I mean, he has to work so hard to cover Burgess because he's busy doing other stuff.
And if there's one team that know about work rate, it's Exeter Chiefs as well. That's just the hallmark of a Rob Baxter team, isn't it?
They will miss Dean Mum so much this season. He's such a leader.
Jeff Barling? You don't think he'll do a job?
Jeff Parling's going to do a magnificent job at being Jeff Parling.
Julian Salvi, top tackler last season.
Yeah, he will
in the Aviva Premiership. That's it. I think that's a really big signing for them.
Yeah.
You go Dave Ewers at six, Julian Salvi at seven, and Toot Thomas Tank in the back row. That's a back row built for November, December, January in the Premiership.
Yeah, agreed. And Exeter, conversely, are hardly losing anyone. I imagine they'll throw Slade straight back in. He's only played one game.
Why wouldn't you?
Noel. Throw him straight back in. Only played one game. Parling
into the match day squad or into the?
I'd probably start them both. I would.
Yeah, because you've got
that would be a. I mean, the newspapers would in the sports supplements would love that, wouldn't
especially
they?
Especially when Slade goes over through a hat trick.
Yeah, and kicks 20 points.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Well, Steenson's one of the was he not top kicker, most accurate kicker last year as well?
I think he might have been. So he's right up there.
And of course, you know, still got the Hill will be there. Not Oscar. What's his name? They've got Dolman. They've got Jess. They're pretty much full strength, aren't they?
Yeah, they'll be nearly full strength. So I think Exeter could sneak.
I've got a very impressive
away victory.
I've got a funny feeling that they might sneak a win away from home. I just think it's going to be tight. I can't wait for that one. It's going to be. Just it's going to be an amazing game. And you should everyone that listens to the podcast. Should, of course, be subscribed to BT Sport.
100%. 100%. We've done it for years.
I will be, about 200 miles, 150 miles away from JB, who will be back up in the northwest. But I will be just metres away from JB's thought double, Austin Healey.
No.
Because
the man's a genius.
You and him have just been...
We have had some interesting similar thoughts, haven't we?
Yeah, there's lots of articles that Austin Healey has penned. Obviously, either great minds think alike or fools seldom differ. But JB on the podcast and Austin Healey in his articles.
Yeah, well, you know, again, he's 100% right on Diamond.
Steve Diamond for next England coach.
Next England coach. My favourite article that he's written is about how the Welsh players should go and play abroad and not in Wales. The man knows his rugby, and that's why he comes to the same conclusions.
And if you listen to the podcast for any length of time, you'll know that JB's banging on about that forever. I think we're done, boys.
I think so.
It's very late. We've all got work in the morning. Well, you two have.
Cheers, Tim.
Thanks, mate.
So at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, I still haven't set up a general email address. Sorry about that, boys. So it's still tim@eggchasers.com if you'd like to email and get in touch with us.
I thought you've changed it to tim@bigtime.com.
tim@eggchasers.com.
Thank you. Not big time.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Listen on the Acast app or via iTunes, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
One more thing, Tim.
Yeah.
Right.
Just one more thing. You might quite like this. We know you've been mentioning about the best World Cup ever, and I think we're all in agreement so far that it is. Someone said on Twitter, can you have a look at the average point difference per game in this World Cup compared to previous, and see if they are getting closer? So obviously I ran the numbers.
I love it. But I saw that same tweet and I just ignored it, to be honest.
What is this?
Because I love having Phil as part of the team. Go on.
Well, in 2003, the average points difference across all of the pool games, which obviously all we can compare so far, was 36 points. With a maximum difference of 142 points, which I think was Australia versus Namibia.
Wow.
Was that not New Zealand, Japan?
No, that was like 95, one.
Yeah.
So 36 was the average in 2003. In 2007, it reduced to 30, with a maximum of 95 as a points difference. 2011, the average reduced again to 28, with a maximum of 87. And 2015, it has further reduced to just 24 points with a maximum of 64, which
that's
was
the average points difference.
The average points difference across all of the pool.
And when you consider some of the, in inverted commas, minnows that there,
yes,
that there are.
But it is the trend is in the right direction, in both terms of the maximum and the average. So it demonstrates that it has been a closer World Cup, and it demonstrates everything that we've been saying about the smaller teams improving.
Love it. Who do you reckon will be the first team that isn't in the top tier that will...
Argentina.
That will bridge the gap and win it?
Win it?
Eventually it will happen.
I think we're...
It'll never happen.
It will happen.
Not in our lifetime.
We're at least 20 years off, yeah.
If it happens, it'll be America.
Well, Japan.
Yeah.
Japan's resources...
America's resources.
Yeah, but America don't care about this. Japan have got real momentum. There was 25 million people watching the Japan Samoa game.
That's
in
quite
Japan.
Amazing.
25 million people.
Yeah,
that's more than most of the team, the population of most of the nations in it.
That okay, good point. What is Japan's population? Like 70 million?
No, 130 something.
Like USA is two or three times that.
USA is about 310, I think, off the top of my head.
USA for me.
Japan.
Well, let's find out in 15 years' time.
20 years' time. Five more World Cups and then we'll see.
Someone will probably make a note of it, or we'll find this podcast in some sort of internet time capsule.
There's no way that we'll be friends in 20 years. Once I'm successful, I'm leaving the losers way behind.
I'll tell you who could win it if they got their act together. Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
well, get Dave Hewers back in.
Well,
get Brian Majati in.
There's four... Zimbabwe-born players playing in this World Cup. Can you name them?
Probably. Do you want me to do it now?
Yes, please.
Playing
in this World Cup. Pocock.
Oh, yeah.
Big Dave Pocock.
Okay.
And that's not even with Dave Ewers and Brian Majati.
David Denton.
You could have the Big Dave back row.
Yeah,
Big
yeah.
Dave Denton, Big Dave Ewers, Big Dave Pocock.
Yeah.
Big Dave Pocock's in inverted commas.
The Beast, of course.
The Beast.
And there is one more... Who is the other one? It's got to be South African, right?
It is not. He's not South African. He's not played a massive part in this tournament. But
an England player?
You have you have definitely heard of him, and you've definitely seen him in World Cups before.
No.
Famously, you saw him in 2007. 2007.
Famously.
Hold on.
Haladin Luscombe.
Ngwenya.
Taku Ngwenya is correct.
Damn it!
Yeah!
Scoring that unbelievable try against Habana.
Right, wrap this up.
Come on, Mugabe, will you just stand aside for the good of rugby, please?
Yes.
That agreed. Should do it, Tim.
One man's heartfelt appeal to dictator Robert Mugabe for the good of rugby.
Listens, right?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That'll work. Right, we'll see you on the next podcast in a bit.
Bye-bye.
Bye.